Hey everyone, it's me, Sarah May, and welcome to episode 3 of Gasps in Spanish.
Flor de sabana germina, pecho abierto.
To get this episode kicked off, we're going to start with some local true crime news. It was reported by KTAR News, that was July 16th, that a body was found in Tempe Town Lake. Authorities are seeking help to identify the man, described as a 6'2", 160-pound African-American male between 25 and 40 years old. He was described to have short dark hair, a dark petite goatee on his chin, scars on his right shoulder and right wrist, and no tattoos. Tempe police said officers responded to the lake for a possible drowning around 1 p.m. and found the man dead in the water. He was discovered near the pedestrian footbridge just to the east on the north side of the lake. At this point, they said it was too early to determine whether foul play was involved, but if anyone with any information about the identity of this deceased male has any info, you're encouraged to contact Tempe Police, 480-350-8311. Super heartbreaking. Moving on to another case that is a little bit more well-known. We've been actually getting a lot of national attention here in Phoenix for the Hacienda healthcare debacle. An August hearing was set this last Tuesday for a former nurse charged with raping an incapacitated patient who gave birth at a long-term care center in Phoenix. The trial date for Nathan Sutherland will be set during his August 28th hearing, which will be coming up next month. He entered a plea of not guilty in February to charges of sexual abuse and abuse of a vulnerable adult. The 30-year-old patient, who had been living at Hacienda Healthcare since 1992, she was in a coma, gave birth to a boy at the facility on December 29th. So this nurse had been having sexual relations with her. Employees said that they had no idea that she was pregnant at the time, even though they were supposed to be monitoring her. So I honestly have no idea how they didn't know that she was pregnant, because when you're pregnant, a lot of things change. Your body temperature, obviously, like, I know they weren't doing like regular hormonal tests on her, but at the same time, there's so much that is going on, you know, within a body that is pregnant, that is gestating, that I really don't understand how they had no idea. It comes across to me as just pure negligence. So Sutherland and the baby were linked after authorities obtained a sample of the caregiver's DNA. The nurse was fired by Hacienda after his January arrest, and he has lost an appeal of an order requiring a test to determine if he has sexually transmitted diseases. Ew, ew, ew. I just feel so bad for this young woman's family. I can't imagine, like, they're already faced with the horrible trauma of having, you know, a loved one on life support, and they entrusted her care into this facility who allowed her to be raped through their negligence, sexually assaulted, and impregnated. So the nursing facility is located over here at 16th Street near Baseline Road, and thank goodness it has come under intense scrutiny since the sexual assault. The chief executive, Bill Timmons, resigned, blessed be, because he sucks. The governor, Doug Ducey, requested an investigation of patient care there, questioned the capabilities of the company's senior leadership, and eventually signed a law to increase protection for vulnerable people in group homes. This should have been done after the movie Kill Bill was released all those years ago, because until I witnessed that, I didn't know that this shit happened. Gross, 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 gross. What a great state. Anyway, moving on. Our case takes place in Scottsdale, Arizona. It's a pretty interesting city. Most native Phoenicians and people throughout the state of Arizona call it Snotsdale for valid and obvious reasons, but let me get into it. So, city known for its rich European roots and arid climate, Scottsdale is also known for its tourism industry. The motto of Scottsdale is the West's most western town, and it prides itself on its rich western history. The Scottsdale Arabian Horse Show takes place here, and it has been taking place every year since 1955. And that show attracts thousands of visitors and tourists to see the 2,000 purebred Arabian and half Arabian horses competing for various prizes and recognition. It's a big, big deal. Not to like people who I know personally, but when it's happening, you know. Scottsdale is also home to a variety of high-end nightclubs, restaurants, hotels, lounges, and bars. Now, I personally hate going out in Old Town Scottsdale. I mean, I do it because I have friends who love it, they enjoy it, and you know, if you're really drunk, it can be fun. My last experience there wasn't so great. I can't say that every time I've gone, it's been terrible. It's just not really my scene, but that's just me. Yeah, so good and bad, like any city. Robert Fisher was born in 1961 on April 13th in Brooklyn, New York. Yay, Brooklyn! But boo, Mr. Fisher. His father was William Fisher, a banker, and his mother was Jan Howell. It's known that he has two sisters. His parents divorced in 1976 when he was 15. According to those closest to Robert, the divorce was extremely difficult and had long-lasting effects on him. He confided to one associate that his life could have been different if his mother had not left the family. So it was very clear that he absolutely blamed his mother for the destruction of his family. They moved out to Arizona. I couldn't find which year that they actually moved out here, but it says that he attended Saguaro High School in Tucson. William was an avid outdoorsman, hunter, and fisher who worked as a surgical catheter technician, respiratory therapist at the Mayo Clinic for a time. He married Mary Cooper in 1987. He was described as a distant control freak of a father who was awkward with his children, but he really tried to hold on to an image as a devoted family man. So his mother-in-law, Ginny Cooper, told investigators that Fisher didn't socialize often with family because of a fear of getting too close to people and losing them. So this kind of ties back to what he was saying earlier about his mother's abandonment of the family. It's pretty clear that he suffered from abandonment issues. So Fisher's mother, Jan, told investigators that she had been a yes-sir wife who didn't stand up to her husband, and she added that she saw similar dynamics early in her son's marriage to Mary. One close friend of Fisher's said that this family unit that he had built for himself in Arizona resembled his childhood family. And I guess that makes sense in a way, because we're all kind of given the example of what our family should look like, you know, the family that we build, like with a partner and with kids, by our family of origin. That's kind of the structure that we're given for how we're supposed to go forward and have our own families. So that kind of makes sense. It's just kind of unfortunate that he didn't really seem to have the best blueprint for that going forward. But by all accounts, the Fishers were described as your typical married couple. Robert was actively involved in men's ministry, so he started off with Mary being really involved, very adamant about, you know, volunteering at the church. And he seemed to really enjoy the ministry initially, but he did begin to withdraw from it later on. They had two children, a boy and a girl. Perfect image, perfect setup, perfect life. But it's usually, you know, that's usually our signal that it not all is as it seems. And in 1998, the Fishers went to their church's senior pastor for marital counseling. Fisher had apparently told some coworkers about a one-night stand he'd had with a prostitute that he met at a massage parlor. He was afraid that Mary would find out and that she would leave him. I guess this one-night stand had given her a UTI, a urinary tract infection, like he'd gotten her sick. That's not really how that works, but it seemed that he was really afraid that she would leave him. Fisher apparently told a hunting buddy that he was renewing his commitment to his faith and marriage because he could not live without his family. This is a bit of a red flag. Kind of sounds like he would rather die than be without his family, which has suicidal ties. It looks to me that he saw this as kind of a wake-up call, and that, you know, he went to counseling. He, you know, was making an effort to repair his marriage and work on his issues. Counseling is no joke. You have to be very vulnerable. You have to be very open in order to make any kind of progress. So according to psychologists, an intense fear of loss is not unusual for an individual traumatized by divorce while an adolescent. In the weeks before everything went down, Mary told several friends that she was thinking about leaving Fisher. And you know, neighbors were reporting hearing loud arguments. April 9th, an extremely loud argument was heard at approximately 10:30 p.m. About 15 minutes later, Robert Fisher appeared on an ATM camera with Mary Fisher's Toyota 4Runner in the background. And then in the early hours of April 10th, 2001, Scottsdale Fire Department received a call to respond to reports of a house fire at 2000 block of North 74th Place. When firefighters arrived on scene, the house had exploded. The explosion was strong enough to have collapsed the front brick wall of the home and rattled the frames of neighboring houses for a half mile in all directions. Firefighters kept the 20-foot-high blaze from spreading to other homes, and a series of smaller secondary explosions believed to be caused by either rifle ammunition or paint cans on the property forced them to keep their distance. Only one firefighter suffered minor injuries to his leg when he lost his balance and fell near the burning house. The gas line from the back of the house's furnace had been pulled out, and the accumulating gas was later ignited by a candle that had been allegedly lit, waiting for the gas to accumulate and descend to the flame hours after being lit. Once firefighters doused the blaze and they were able to approach the site, investigators made a very shocking discovery. They found Mary Fisher, who was 38 at the time, she had been very, very badly burned. She was barely recognizable. But in order for a fire to disintegrate an entire body, it has to be extremely hot. I would say upwards of 2,000 degrees. Even with the, you know, resulting explosions of what happened in this home, it wasn't enough to completely destroy the body of Mary Fisher. Her throat had actually been slit, and she had a gunshot wound in the back of her head. As the firefighters continued searching through the charred remains, they found the body of Brittany, their 12-year-old daughter. Her throat had also been slit from ear to ear. And then they found the body of the 10-year-old boy, Bobby, whose throat had also been slit. All three were found in their beds. Robert Fisher was nowhere to be found. So I do just want to take a minute here to talk about the victims. Mary was described as a loving, devoted wife and mother, completely, completely devoted to her family and wholeheartedly involved in her church. She attended the Scottsdale Baptist Church, where on Tuesday, 1 week later, a joint funeral was held for her and her two children. About 1,300 people showed up at their memorial service. It was standing room only. The pastor spoke about Mary and her two children. Brittany, who was 12 at the time, was described as smart, compassionate, and humble, very dedicated to her faith, always willing to help others, and just a joy to have in their youth ministry. Bobby, who was 10, was described as very active, outgoing, funny. He showed an interest in the outdoors and was taking hunting classes. There were no pictures of Robert at their funeral, but there was a slideshow of all of the family members showing them very happy, enjoying life during better times. The pictures that were displayed in the lobby showed Bobby lying under a truck, Brittany posing with her friends, and there was Mary's baby photo with a stuffed lamb resting next to it. Investigators believe that before Fisher fled the scene, he severed a gas line, poured flammable liquid throughout the property, and lit a candle, causing the house to explode and then burn to the ground. It's obvious that the stabbing wounds could not have been inflicted during the fire. They believe that he had killed them several hours prior to the explosion. He had slashed the throat of his wife and each of his children. Detective Kirkham stated the following: "As a source of ignition, we believe that a candle with a candle holder was used as a timing device in order to allow Robert time to leave the residence. Robert committed the arson in order to cover up the murders, believing that the bodies would be burned beyond recognition, but it didn't cover it up quite as well as expected." Understatement of the year. So, of course, law enforcement launched a full-scale manhunt for Fisher, and then 10 days after Fisher was caught on that ATM footage, Mary's SUV was spotted by a hiker. According to Detective Kirkham, it had been abandoned near Fisher's favorite hunting area. Quote, "It was clean. There was no dust on it. It was underneath pine trees, and there were very few tree needles on top of the vehicle or in the vehicle, which indicated to us that it had probably been dumped there within 24 hours of discovery. Investigators arrived at the remote area, but the landscape contained hundreds of caves, which made the search very difficult. And then more than 100 officers conducted a manhunt of the mountainous terrain, and days of searching produced nothing." Fisher was a mountain man. I don't know if he necessarily had the resources to kind of take off and survive in the wilderness, but he definitely had the know-how. Two major theories emerged. One, you know, that the despondent Robert Fisher took refuge in one of the caves where he eventually committed suicide. And the other, of course, suggested that he left the SUV behind as a ploy to divert the attention of investigators and then vanished. So what's also crazy is that found within the SUV was the family dog. And this really trips me out because, and the dog was fine. The dog was alive. How are you going to kill, murder in cold blood? And if you think about it, like when you slit somebody's throat, like that is so intimate and so personal and so vile. He didn't even shoot them. Like there's a certain sense of intimacy and closeness. You have to be like right up next to the victim in order to carry this out. How can you do that to your wife who you've been married to and had a family with? Like granted they had issues, but this was his wife and then his two little children at the ages of 10 and 12 years old. This is their father. So he did all that and then took the dog with him and then left the dog. He didn't do anything to the dog. Like, how can you prize the life of this, you know, like dogs are great. I love dogs. Don't get me wrong. How can you prize the life of this animal over the lives of your family? That makes no sense. It's insane. On July 19th, a state arrest warrant was issued in Phoenix charging Fisher with 3 counts of first degree murder and 1 count of arson. Subsequently, he was declared a fugitive, and a federal arrest warrant was issued by the United States District Court of the District of Arizona charging him with unlawful flight to avoid persecution. On June 29, 2002, Fisher was named by the FBI as the 475th fugitive to be placed on the 10 most wanted list. He was also on America's Most Wanted Dirty Dozen list of the show's most notorious fugitives and was profiled on The Hunt with John Walsh. The FBI offers a reward of up to $100,000 for information leading to his capture. And as of April 2003, the FBI had received hundreds and hundreds of leads. However, all reported sightings of Fisher have been inconclusive or false. In February 2004, an individual with a striking physical resemblance to Fisher was arrested in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Fingerprints eventually confirmed that he was not Fisher. He was held by Canadian police for approximately a week until a family member correctly identified him. The FBI alerted local law enforcement in 2012 that Fisher may be living in the Payson area in Gila County, Arizona. In October 2014, police raided a house in Commerce City, Colorado after receiving a tip that Fisher was hiding there. Despite arresting 2 occupants, they didn't find any sign of him. Fisher is considered to this day armed and extremely dangerous and has ties to Florida and New Mexico. There has been speculation that he has committed, you know, time going back to the original theories that he committed suicide or started a new life under an unassumed identity. FBI agent Caldwell's sense of his personality and habits is that he is arrogant. He's cocky. He's a know-it-all and a loner. He chews tobacco and favors the Copenhagen brand, sometimes walks in an odd, erect manner with his chest out due to back pain, and like we've said several times, is an avid hunter and fisherman. In April 2016, FBI officials and Scottsdale police displayed new age-enhanced photos of Fisher during a news conference on the 15th anniversary of the murders. So this is the lingering mystery of this case. Is he alive or dead? If he is alive today, Fisher would be 55 years old. He's 6 feet tall and approximately weighs 190 pounds. He wore his hair closely cropped. Investigators say he may bear little resemblance to the Robert Fisher of 2001. And as mentioned, the FBI has created multiple photo illustrations that demonstrate how Fisher's appearance might have changed. They might get a more accurate description, if you ask me, by just putting his picture in front of that new face app that is all the rage these days. So the FBI is working under the theory that he's very much alive. Mary Fisher's family still lives in Arizona and remains involved in the investigation. I really like this quote that was given by the lead detective on this case. He said, "We work these cases for the victims. The FBI doesn't forget. We're going to keep him on the top 10 list till we feel we've exhausted all means to find him or prove he's dead." So that pretty much wraps up our case. Robert Fisher is our main suspect in this terrible crime. A lot of people think he killed himself just based on reading the police reports. You know, they talk about what he said about being suicidal, having that affair, disappearing into the wilderness for a while before coming back. But the police reports also mentioned that Robert had bad knees and he used a quad bike to get around a lot, like when he was camping. But the quad was found at the house, so he didn't have that like when he took off into the woods. Unless he got another vehicle somehow, I doubt that he could have gotten super far. And then with all of the caves, all of the really difficult places to search, he might have died out there. It would just take investigators too long to search every cave. And it also sounds like because of all the, you know, all the issues he was having with his back, with his knees, he was taking a large amount of painkillers at the time. He did have some such supplies like water purification tablets prior to the murders. You just need those when you're an outdoorsman though. I mean, I don't know anybody who goes out hiking who doesn't take those, because in an emergency situation, like if you get lost, if you get turned around, if you run out of water on the trail, you need to have those so that if you come across a source, you can purify it. Because any water that you find out in the desert is probably not going to be flowing. It's going to be stagnant. It's going to be very dirty. So you need to have water purifiers for an emergency situation. I mean, honestly, it's pretty unlikely that you'll even find water, especially if you're out in like the summertime, springtime. It is hot. It sounds like he didn't really think it out. He made this decision within 24 hours of the murders taking place. And, you know, so that kind of leads into the idea that he did commit suicide. If that was the plan, like, why wouldn't he end his life with his family? Like, why would he bother to cover up the bodies? Why would he even bother to set the fire? Like, if he was, maybe that was initially the plan and then he chickened out and he just took off and then he decided, you know, since I'm leaving, I gotta cover my tracks. But I don't know. So there's just a lot. There's a lot to unpack in this case. I'm really excited to dive a little bit deeper into the theories and the opinions of other people. There's a lot of online discussion about this. If you would like to go and follow my Instagram and my blog, the blog is on WordPress, The Forbidden Arts Phoenix, with Phoenix spelled P-H-X. And then my Instagram is also at The Forbidden Arts Phoenix, P-H-X for Phoenix. You've been listening to Gasps in Spanish, and until next time, stay safe out there, everybody. Bye. Flor de sabana germina, pecho abierto.